This podcast is brought to you by Cedar HR Solutions. Support our sponsors, TimeClockIt and YourHIPAAtraining.com. Visit them on the web.
Hello, Doctor. It's Paul Edwards. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Cedar HR Solutions, and I'm joined by Kurt Tuller today.
Hi, Doctor.
We're going to discuss leadership, particularly how to kind of create a good leader within your practice, and specifically a great office manager.
And the office manager is really important to your practice working efficiently, working smoothly, and most importantly, working in a way that makes you happy.
Right.
And what we've seen as a Solution Center advisor, I speak with a lot of our members, and we'll have people who call in and say, hey, I had a great dental assistant. She was a wonderful person, motivated, really good at her job, worked here for 10, 15 years. I promoted her into an office manager, and it's been a disaster.
So she was probably the best person, but maybe not the best candidate. Didn't have the skills or something's missing.
And that's the real issue that we run into, is because the skill set for being a manager is different than any other skill set that you have in the office.
Right.
And being good at this other thing does not make you a good manager.
No, it doesn't. But I get the you want to promote from within. You want to work with people you're familiar with. And there's a thought process out there that says when someone's been with you for a while and a better job comes along that pays more, you want to give them an opportunity.
And you've already spent that time building the trust with them. So that's super important. And you can mold them into it, but you just can't expect to pluck them up, drop them in, and everything goes smoothly.
Yeah, the beer truck problem.
Yeah.
Your manager gets hit by a beer truck on the way to work, and you're just like, hey, you who have been here longer than anyone else.
Yep, you're next.
You're my new manager. And so I want to address that just a little bit. It is good to promote from within when you can. There can be all kinds of advantages, especially if you plan for it or you can plan for it. But one of the biggest mistakes, and Kurt just kind of outlined it, I have a great person, they're a great assistant, I move them up, and now they're not good at managing. And what ends up happening is then you lost your old office manager and you lose that dental assistant, because it's really hard for them to go back. Because now you're going to go back to them and say, look, you know that pay raise I gave you? That's gone. Remember the authority that you now had around here? That's gone. All the upsets that were created by the practice and your fellow employees and yourself and me as we stumbled through that, well, that's still here. So we're gonna have to let you go. It's a double loss.
Yeah, and it's going to be a continuing loss, because now that's become a poisoned position in the office often as well. And one of the things that I like to tell people to address this problem is, even if you're promoting within or if you're hiring from without, think of it as hiring. You're looking for a candidate. That candidate may be the person that's been in front of you for the last 10 years, or it might not, but approach it that way.
So before we get to how about you outline what it is you want them to do, it's not, you know, it's not if Cindy was your old office manager, it's not like be Cindy. That's the default thing that we get to is do what she did and we'll be absolutely fine. So I want to discuss the concept of a path back. When you raise someone up in your business from, say, dental assistant position to the manager, you don't want to give the money instantly. You want to give them a path back to being a dental assistant. So first, ask their permission. Is this something you want to do? And then we'll talk about some of the expectations that you should set with them. And then you want to enroll the team. Can we get everybody to help this person move up into this position? So now you've got this respect developing and support system, hopefully helping this person raise up. But what happens if they can't be a great manager? And it shows up pretty quick. Within 2 or 3 weeks or a month, they come in your office and go, I'm not good at this. I hate this. I don't like managing people. I had no idea these people would be texting me on Saturday in the middle of the night. And I don't have the skills. And, you know, I forgot when I said yes that I have 3 kids. And
or it comes very simply down to you find them crying in the break room.
That's exactly it. And now if you haven't provided a path up and a path back, then there is no path back. You have to be able to say, well, you know what, everybody, here's a constructive way. We're gonna move Beth back down. Beth's decided she doesn't want to be managing. We're still going to have her take care of some of these new responsibilities, but she's going to move back into the dental assistant position. And if you don't have to take away benefits or money or any of those things, that becomes a far better scenario for you.
And if you haven't burned the boats behind you, right? You told people, we're going to try this.
Right.
You know, I have the 100% faith in this person, but everything has the possibility
and
of going wrong.
And here's the markers that we need to do, and here's where we're going to go. So I just wanted to bring that up. We didn't even have it in our outline. So so we talked about this, going to a little bit, Kurt. We're treat it like you're hiring, and it starts with you first, not them. You need to figure out what it is you need.
Yeah, and taking the idea that you had before, which is like be what Cindy was, in part, yes. You do want to look at what the old office manager did or what you want a prospective new office manager to do and say, okay, these are the job duties, these are the management responsibilities that I need this person to do. But look more than that. Don't limit yourself and say, my top end was my last person. Mm-hmm. Say, what else? What did I wish that other person could do?
Right. So two scenarios. You have an office manager going out and they weren't that great. So you have lots of things that you didn't like about what they did. And I want you to think about it in the positive, which is they may have been bad at something, but what is the opposite of that? How would you have described that thing they were bad at? Managing people. Maybe they're just bad at handling upsets in the office.
Yeah, we have plenty of office managers that are control freaks. They won't let anything happen without their involvement. So you might be looking for someone who's a little bit more collaborative or a little bit more into delegation.
Or has the experience delegating and being collaborative. So just keep in mind, if you ask for not to get the negative things, you end up getting the negative things. You want to frame them in the skills that you're looking for. And, you know, you can't post that online. You know, here are the things we don't want.
Yeah.
You know, you always post
always
it post
in the positive.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we get a lot is a person will come in and say, what should I look for? And my response is, well, that depends on you, because the collaborative, consensus-seeking, team-working office manager will work in some cultures and will be a absolute disaster in others.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. So job description is the first thing. I'm going to, you know, we'll all get a laugh here. Just everybody stop and chuckle, because I'm going to say, I know you have an updated job description for the last office manager. Now comes the laugh. But you're going to have a great job description. We've said it before. Not only does it offer protections, but if you can't tell someone what you expect of them, then I don't know how you can expect things of them. And it starts there.
And that clarity is important to discuss at the beginning, not the middle.
How about conditional? So we're going to hire someone. What else do we do? We've decided they're one of the last two, or maybe the person we're going to hire.
Sure. So we want to look into who they were. And that means background checks. It means reference checks. It means credit checks in a lot of situations, but not every situation.
Okay. Why credit checks?
Well, they're going to be handling money, almost certainly, and they're going to be responsible for situations in which they can get you into debt. And if they can't handle their own finances, the thought of them handling yours should be a little bit scary.
Right. So if they've got big debts out there and they haven't been handling it, I want to be clear here. In the last 8 years, the number of bankruptcies that had to be declared and the mess that was made inside of the markets, people have some marks against them. Just about everybody does. So, you know, you're not as much looking for those things as you're looking for, you know, as we say with associate background checks, does he or she have a big debt in Nevada, you know, in the Las Vegas area?
Sure.
So you're looking for those things. And I have to tell you, doctors are the least confrontational people on the face of the earth when it comes to this. And you guys pass embezzlers on left and right, and they end up going from office to office to office. So the background checks are helpful. You can find that sort of stuff, making sure that you do reference checks as well. How about an agreement? We don't usually advise that the employees get agreements.
Yeah, for the most part, it's not important. You're not concerned that the dental assistant's going to walk away and take a large chunk of your patient base with them, or
employees.
You know, a whole bunch of take your entire team. Mm-hmm. That isn't true of the office manager. The office manager could very easily have a better relationship with your patients, and I'd be surprised if they didn't have a closer relationship with your team.
Right.
So if they leave in the future, there's a real worry that they could walk out with more than just the clothes on their back.
So an at-will relationship can still exist, and the agreement for non-solicitation and confidentiality.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, not taking the patient list, an agreement on exactly how their compensation is going to work. A lot of these are getting a little bit more complicated. Your dental assistant may have a very set hourly wage or salary or some basic bonus structure. Office manager is usually a little bit more complicated, right? You want to incentivize them to produce a lot better.
Good point. So if you're giving them a little bit of the improvement that they make happen, or taking away, not making it available to them. You have to outline that stuff. What about just the management? So let's talk. We just talked about some of the things you need to do as you're hiring and think about common problems. How about now we've got an employee, we've got someone, you've empowered him or her, usually her, in medical practices, yeah. dental practices, that sort of thing. So what's probably the biggest rule?
Well, I want that person to know what it is they have to do, mm-hmm. what it is they can do, and what it is they can't do, right? So right. clarify, and this is going to be something you hear from us all the time, right? That clarity mm-hmm. in expectations, that clarity in agreement. So make sure you have that conversation. The job description was a great start, but mm-hmm. there's going to be stuff that isn't covered in that.
Right.
What do they have to sign this sheet or have that done, or who's responsible for the schedule, all that kind of thing.
So these are really what we call SOP, standard operating procedures. So make sure you have a kind of an SOP standing outside of your handbook, because it's always something that can be changed. It should be malleable. You can alter it to the needs of the practice. How about power itself?
Oh, and this is a scary topic, especially for the doctor, because if you hire someone, you may not know all that much about that person beyond what comes on the resume.
What happens when you give them,
exactly.
All of a sudden you turn around and you're like, wow, who is that?
Yeah, and there's yeah. something about great power and great responsibility in there too. But yeah. here's the thing, without providing that power, we're going to get substandard results.
Right.
So you have to find that good balance. We run into, and I say we, Solution Center runs into the problem of an office manager who calls us, has a bad employee, wants to fix that bad employee, has tried to fix that bad employee.
Hasn't figured out.
Yeah, and yeah. they don't have the backing. There's right. no political capital for them to get rid of this person because this employee is the favorite, or the doctor really gets along with them. The manager, in order to do their job, needs to have the power to be able to do it. And if you want a low responsibility position, that's fine. You don't have to give them a lot of power. But that high responsibility, when you're saying manage the staff, mm-hmm. they need to be able to manage the staff.
And that includes making hiring and firing decisions.
Yep.
How about pay, Kurt? I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball here. I don't think we really got into this too much in our outline, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway. I've got three employees, four. I have a hygienist, a part-time hygienist. Give me five employees. I have
okay.
a dental assistant, part-time hygienist, full-time hygienist. I have a full-time person that works in the front office kind of helping out billing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided I need an office manager to kind of hold all this together. And it looks like we might hire a couple other people. So I kind of don't want to be too involved in that.
Sure.
Can I pay her a fixed salary? Is that the advantage?
Well, you could. You uh-huh. could pay a salary basis. Mm-hmm. It probably in that situation isn't going to be a good idea. And that's because in the beginning, that person is going to have the title office manager, but they're going to wear a heck of a lot more hats than that.
Right.
And you can't be sure what that's going to look like in the beginning. So what I would say is make it more of an incentive based.
Right.
Say, hey, here are the goals that this practice mm-hmm. has. Here's where we want to be. Here's what you get when you do that. And that might be a salary bump if that's the method that you really like, where they make a certain amount extra. Okay. It might be a percentage of revenue. It might be, a bonus on new patients over a certain number. Whatever it is, have that conversation and think about what your goals are and make sure the bonus matches the goals.
Okay. And then let's talk HR law.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the rules? I mean, can I just put someone in charge of my practice and make them a fixed salary person? Isn't that the advantage? I just pay them a certain amount and I work the dog poop out of them and I don't have to pay them overtime?
So base rule, and the base rule is that you can have them work as much as you want. Generally speaking, for most of your employees, and you probably know this very well, doctor, you're going to have to pay them overtime.
Right.
A manager, dependent upon what type of manager they are, mm-hmm. might be able to get into what's called an exempt status. And that right. means that they're exempt from overtime, they're exempt from minimum wage.
Right.
To do that, they're going to have to jump through their position is going to have to jump through a couple of hoops. And that first is that they're paid a salary. And that second is that their managerial position meets some requirements. And the biggest ones of those, they're going to have to manage at least three people. They're going to have to spend more than half of their time doing that managing.
Just managing, yeah. not doing anything else in the practice, but managing those two people.
Yeah, and that means almost more than just supervising, right?
Yeah.
Not just watching the person, but how do they do things? When do they do things?
Right.
How much of that thing? What's their priorities? Everything that you think of a manager, that's what they're spending their time doing, not doing the work of the practice, right? Doing the management of the practice.
So the office I just described, I don't see the office manager managing the two hygienists at all.
Yep.
Probably not the dental assistant for most of her day. She's going to be in with the dentist or taking x-rays or doing those things. So
yep.
that office manager wouldn't even qualify for those for that status because they don't meet the Department of Labor or the IRS's test for being a manager.
Yeah, and the safe bet is always going to be to classify them as non-exempt, meaning that you do pay them overtime.
And, you know, you have to manage their time then. So that's now your job, is there's an expectation of how many hours that they can work and so forth. So do we talk about that match power to responsibilities? Yeah, make sure. Let's make sure that they have the power. Don't undermine them. Mm-hmm. And if you feel like you need to, I'm air quoting, undermine them, don't go around the manager. Bring the manager in and talk to them and let them get to the decision. Let them reverse themselves or get it cleaned up.
Sure. I mean, think back to the time, doctor, when you worked as an associate and the host doctor there wanted you to do something differently with your assistant. It's his employee. He can do that.
Right.
But man, does it hurt if he goes around you, right? You want to be brought into that conversation. Your office manager does too. And if the employees see that the office manager is meaningless or her position can be ignored, man, will they ignore it?
Oh, they will. They'll ignore her and they'll go to you. And why have an office manager then? And then there's experience. Same scenario when you were an associate. If you were working for another doctor, you're working there to gain experience. But when you say, hey, I need some guidance on how to do this, you don't mean elbow me out of the way and you do it for me and I never get an opportunity to do this. That's not what you were looking for as an associate. And neither was your manager. And it doesn't serve anybody when you do those sort of things. Even though you may know better, your way may even be better. Just let your managers manage and work their own way through things. Oversight and control. That sounds like something we do from the airport, from above.
And it in some ways is, but you really got to get a little bit more dirty than that sounds.
Okay.
And this is how we help that manager become the manager we want them to be.
Uh-huh.
Right? We have to see what they're doing. Are they coaching properly? Are they speaking to the employee in a way that employee can hear and a way that employee can correct their
you
bad
behavior?
You mean
someone that they're managing? Are they managing – is their conversation good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are they saying the right things in the right way?
Right.
And are their subordinates essentially improving?
Right.
You know, that proof is in the pudding in that one. We also want to see that they understand what the rules are. This person, especially if they used to be a dental assistant, didn't have a lot of managerial experience, they may not know the rules very well. They may not have read the entire handbook. In that case, they need an education, and they're going to need to make sure that they understand how the handbook works because people are going to be coming to them for an explanation.
Or when they sit down in an interview, you don't want them asking someone, so do you have kids? And, you know, all those questions. So that's what you're talking about, right, Kurt? Get them the HR knowledge and support they need so that they don't buy – I mean, they're an extension of you as the owner. When they make a mistake, you make a mistake.
Yep.
And if they make a mistake that violates some kind of wage and hour law, I mean, I've seen managers who part of their pay was based on profitability, and that meant hours work were part of that, their labor cost. And she was going in and she was changing people's hours, and so that it made the labor cost go down. And her reasoning, her justification for that was, these people spend 3 hours a day not doing anything around here, talking and joking and checking their phones and all. So I just took an hour off of everybody's pay last week because they're not working. And that's not okay.
That is definitely not okay. And it can get as, you know, kind of obvious in hindsight as that, or it can be as simple as the employee comes up and says, hey, how does my vacation work? And the office manager says, I don't know.
Right.
And that's a problem because she really or he really needs to know mm-hmm. and needs to have that confidence to be able to answer that kind of thing off the cuff.
Right. I think another thing for measuring whether or not this is going okay are goals, that this is a forward-looking conversation where a person, you and the manager, have some goals. And that some of the goals can involve the team. Some of the goals can be as simple as, you see that filing box over there with the monsters that are growling in it? Would you open the box and see what the monster is, and would you take care of that? I'm tired of dealing with that. Things that you've been trying to get done that you haven't been able to get done. And it can also involve the team. More callbacks on patients, better filling the schedule. Help me decide over the next quarter whether or not we should really start closing on Fridays. We tried expanding. It hasn't been working that well. Just, you know, goals, 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 goals. Little things that you guys, big things, big and little things that you guys can measure and see if you're working towards your goals.
And that measurement is really important because we want to be able to hold that person to it 3 months, 6 months, a year from now and say, hey, did you do the thing we asked you to do?
Positive and negative feedback. You got to do those. And those come out of the goals. You just, that's, I think we, so often we, first of all, you don't want to give somebody negative feedback. And then you run this conversation about what they're not doing and how they're not getting it accomplished and how you made them the manager and you expected this of them and why aren't they doing this. And you do all of that. And it's like this character assassination that's going on in secret inside of your head. And so by setting goals, you guys are in a conversation where you can hold each other accountable. Yeah. Doctor, I could have gotten that goal, but remember, you did this, and that kept me from being able to do what you asked me to do. Yeah. So you're getting something going back and forth.
And I think another big thing that people forget about is, what is that person doing when they're just moving around the office doing their job?
Right.
Do they look like the employee that you want the other employees to be? They are the role model. You've set them up a little bit on a pedestal, not a high one necessarily, but a pedestal.
Yep.
And he said, behave like this person. Are they behaving in that way? Are they following the rules of the office?
So they're modeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're role models for the rest of the office.
They are role models. They can't be late. They don't, because they now have this privilege, they can't take extra time at lunch. If anything, they get less time. They do have to step into the role and lead by example.
And that's another important conversation to have ahead of time, too. This is going to mean a different standard, a different criteria that we're going to hold you to.
Yeah, if I'm trying to get everybody to get off their phones and not be checking them when they shouldn't be checking them, I can't be sitting there on my phone checking my phone when I shouldn't be on my phone. So, Doctor, that's for you, too, by the way. I just want you to know that when you go into a meeting and you want everybody's undivided attention and your phone is vibrating on the table, that's all that they can think about. They can't hear you. They can't do anything. And I tend to forget this sometimes. I also have to model for the people who are around me. So this leadership model in our small businesses is pointed at all of us.
Yeah. And we had a call into the Solution Center literally yesterday about a doctor who was furious that everyone was checking their phones. And so he created a whole PowerPoint presentation and had a staff meeting and put it up there in front of them and said, hey, you guys can't be checking your phones. And one of the employees raised their hand and said, what about you, doctor?
That awkward. Didn't go well, did it?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell me he took a call during the presentation.
Probably that too. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, and that can be insubordinate. There can be problems with that. But remember, people are watching.
Right. So at least while you're trying to get behaviors changed, we're not saying that you're not the boss and you can't check your phone when you need to check your phone, but there is that leadership model there. Risk. Let's move into risk.
So I think the big one that most people are afraid of when they transfer some of that power over, they give up some of the control in the office, is that this person is going to use that power, abuse it, and steal from them, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very obvious feeling because you're taking money from the office and putting it in your own pocket as that office manager. And yes, that is a real thing. Yes, it does happen. It happens actually a lot more frequently than I think we give it credit for.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is not as scary a risk as some of the ones out there. There are things that you can do to control it. There are methods that you can put in place. We actually are going to do a podcast on specifically that, mm-hmm. so take a look for that one. But there are things that you can do to put the brakes on that, at least, and catch it if you begin to suspect it.
So that's the main thing. We're not going to belabor the point here because we're not going to give you a lot of detail on it. But you don't want to be too trusting, but you also don't want to treat someone like they're going to steal from you. It's not inevitable. So you need checks and balances there.
Yep.
And to understand what you've given up. And there's some things I don't want you to give up, Doc. And this is the first one. This is big. Please stop giving your personal email login information and having your office manager act like your executive assistant and allowing them to check your emails. Let me tell you something. What this means is that if you've got a problem going on in your office and you're talking to someone like me and I need to communicate with you and you've forgotten that you've given her this or whatever, the next thing you know, this person is sitting there looking at our communication. And I don't know why people abdicate this part of their throne, but just please don't give them access to all of your personal stuff, your voicemails, all those things. You need to draw a line somewhere. This is not family.
And it also means that if that person has access to your personal resources, that they know about your skeletons.
They do.
And everybody has them. That's not a judgment on you personally. Nope. Everybody's got stuff they're a little bit less proud of. If that person turns against you, they have a lot of access to, or leverage against you.
It's another thing. I was in a closed panel meeting as a consultant for the ADA a couple of weeks ago. And we really talked about this, about what it was like to have someone who is right there next to you and knows everything. And you know, if this is your first office manager, or maybe you've made this mistake before, but you just need to be careful because they can see everything you're doing. You've got to be above board. We all get it. There's people out there, they'll code things differently. They're working with insurance, but there are people out there that do this sort of stuff that they shouldn't be doing. And when you've got an office manager in there, she's seeing that. And you know, the doctor that goes in, and every time cash comes in, he walks out there and he grabs it out of the cash thing and he takes it in the back and it never goes anywhere. Well, if that's what you're modeling, then that's what you're going to get. And when you model that in front of powerful people, an empowered office manager, don't be surprised when that sort of stuff comes back. So you've got to be really, really vigilant about what you do and how you lead someone.
Yeah. And I'm guessing most of you don't have that problem. So it's a more of a potential future risk, or one that kind of lurks out there. The risk that I'm most afraid of, the one that I think most people ignore, is that you're empowering this person who then is going to be treated as an agent by employees, by patients, and that agent acts as if they are in your shoes. So if they violate employment law, if they violate some sort of ethical law, you've done it.
Right.
The practice is going to be held accountable. Maybe even depending on the violation, you as a doctor might be held accountable. And that can be a real problem. So when we talked about having the manager educated and trained on how to do their job and how to understand employment law, that's a really important thing, because those violations, they are going to hurt when they come down.
And there's a lot of misunderstandings out there. It's a big body of knowledge that an office manager is expected to have. And you want to, you know, it's fix our marketing and hire a new employee and get rid of that employee for me. And why aren't our collections where they're supposed to be? And where is that paperwork from our insurance? Somebody just stole something out of my car. And why isn't the landscaping guy here? And did you know that the operatory, the sink in operatory 2 is dripping and leaking? I think I told you a week ago. And that list of responsibilities for an office manager is never ending. And I think I just highlighted why an office manager can be incredibly, some of the ways they can be incredibly valuable.
And I think that one of the things that we forget is that on top of all of those specific things, we want them to be HR experts greater than our business attorney is, the person who writes our contracts. We want them to know more about it than they do.
Right.
And that's almost unfair.
Right.
One of the reasons that CEDAR exists is to provide a helping hand to an office manager who is well-intentioned, who is hardworking, who is great with people, but just can't afford to keep up with all of the rule changes and the minutia and how this particular situation is going to be different.
Right.
And so we're a phone call away to give that person, who can execute very well on it, the information they need.
So one of the riskiest things that your office manager is ever going to do is, well, there's a couple things. They're going to investigate issues. You know, you just want to be careful. When you need to let them know. When someone brings something to you, it's as if it's happened. We don't have to blow it up, but we need to look into it, and we need to give it our undivided attention and not just dismiss Cindy because she's always complaining about something. But what she complained about on this last thing was an OSHA violation, or she complained about she didn't think her paycheck was correct. She thought she'd work some overtime. And your manager's like, oh, it's Cindy again. And by the way, you've been talking to the manager about looking for an opportunity to replace Cindy. So 2 weeks ago, Cindy came in and let you know that you had an OSHA violation, she thought, even though it turned out not to be one, and she had a problem with her paycheck. And your office manager's like, well, now's a good time. And so your office manager comes in and says, guess what, doctor? I got rid of Cindy. I found someone. I've been interviewing, and Cindy is gone. And then, Kurt, about a month later, the office manager is going to come in with a letter for the doctor. And what's it going to say?
It's going to say, pay us $50,000 or see us in court.
Yeah. We represent Cindy. Cindy brought a protected. She was protected at the time when she let you know about the OSHA her concern about the OSHA violation. She was protected around public policy. Not only that, a week later she told you there was a problem with her paycheck, and you fired her for those two things. And so your office manager needs to understand all of that stuff and have a way to check on that kind of thing. And so that brings us right into firing, and then we're going to wrap this up. So, Kurt, talk a little bit about education for someone who's going to fire someone. First of all, what we just talked about.
Yeah, which is protected class and protected activity. Mm-hmm. So protected activity are things that an employee does or has had done to them that puts them into a position where you can't retaliate against them by taking a negative action like termination, yeah. Right? So filing a complaint, having been harassed, having discussed, well, NLRA actually doesn't apply in this instance. It's one of the rare places because yep. This is a manager. But those kind of activities would protect an employee.
Workman's comp claims.
Workers' comp. Yeah, that's a great one. Protected class, you're probably very familiar with this, but these are things like race, ethnicity, citizenship status, sexual orientation, gender, marital right. status, pregnancy, disability, mm-hmm. things like that. The more boxes someone can check as a minority in those statuses, the more protected they are. Now, you can definitely fire someone who falls into that. But we want to see a lot of documentation because the more boxes, the more risk.
Right. So managers who fire on your behalf, and that's one of the beautiful things about having a good manager, is you don't have to be caught in that minutia. You might have to support it. You might even have to be there for it. But managers who have to fire are doing probably one of the riskiest things ever. I mean, you are far more likely to be sued by a former employee than you are by a patient. And that holds true. Yep. I mean, that's just true.
And for more money.
Yeah, and for more money, by the way. That's absolutely true as well. So,
but if everything goes wrong, mm-hmm. right, and the manager doesn't work out for whatever reason, right. you need to get him out, now it's even riskier.
Oh, now we're firing the manager.
Yeah, because okay. if you're firing a dental assistant, things are bad.
Yep.
There's risk. You can get sued, but they're not going to know as much about your business. They're not going to know as much about you. They're not going to have access to the kind of things that can really kind of burn the house down right. before they leave.
Yeah.
And so when we get calls where an office manager has to be removed from the situation, you know, separated from employment, the questions we get tend to be like, how do I get the uniforms back? I need her keys back. How do I change this?
My laptop, the
employee handbook.
And she I'm has like, my dog.
Yeah. Yes. And I was like, these are small potato concerns.
Right.
If you never see that uniform again, that's fine.
Yeah.
Rekey the office regardless of whether you get the keys right. back. Doesn't matter. The things that I'm concerned about, she's got access to all your state secrets, right?
Those passwords.
Passwords, patient lists, processes, techniques you may have developed, pricing structures, your web page maybe, uh-huh. All kinds of state interactions. Like she may be the go-to person who talks to the regulators. She right. may be the person who handles your finance, who knows what's going on with your CPA. Mm-hmm. These are big, big concerns that you want to take care of before you take remove her from that position.
Right.
She also may be more connected to your staff than you are.
Right.
The rest of the team may see her as a leader, and if she sets fire and drops a match and walks out, they may walk out with her.
Uh-huh.
And that can be a real problem, or just be really, really angry. So before taking that step, consider what the real threats are.
Yeah. I hate to call it consequences, because consequences kind of is like it says you're weighing this. And once you've decided someone has to go, you know, there has to be a way. There just has to be a way.
Yeah.
But, you know, keep in mind that when you empower someone, you really want to keep your leadership level high, your involvement there, and not just abdicate everything to them. So that when and if it's time for someone to go who's in a manager's position, you're confident. And frankly, they know it's coming. No firing should ever be a surprise. You know, all of the problems you've been having along the way should have been talked about and addressed and been a part of the modeling you're doing for her that she or he would do for the other employees.
And that they already have a path out
yeah.
Because you have set up a handbook that talks about how an employee is separated, how performance standards are judged, what happens when they haven't met those standards, and what happens when they have to leave.
Yeah, they know it's coming.
Yeah, that they know it's coming, that their agreement specifically, if you have one for them, specifically yep. contemplates that separation and how, you know, any bonus structures would be paid out. So there's no issue of them running off to the Department of Labor and
right.
starting fires.
So I'm going to highlight this last thing, Kurt. During this conversation, which is going on probably close to a half hour, maybe a little bit more, Kurt and I have probably used terms and said things that don't make sense to you, that you're not familiar with. You may not know the difference. You may not know what the National Labor Relations Act is, the NLRB, the board that enforces it, the DOL, the Department of Labor, the list, the IRS list for someone who can be exempt. You may not know what exempt and non-exempt means. And let me tell you, your office manager needs to know these things. It'd be great if you know them, but your office manager must know all these things and more. They've got to be familiar with state laws. They need the capability to be able to look at a situation from a 10,000-foot view, and they got to be able to say, Doc, I know she just made you mad, but she filed that workman's comp claim a month ago, and I remember during our handbook survey or during our handbook customization, we got taught about that and that she's protected right now, and I didn't write her up last time. I think we need to step back and get some guidance. And that's where folks like us fall into place. So just make sure that you give your office manager the resources. Resources and knowledge are the best power they can have. You can't force people to do things. The more you know, the better you are at what it is that you do. And so I just want to stress that. Make sure they have the support. And don't expect them to be able to keep up with every state law and write your policies and do all of those things. They can keep up with them. They can communicate. But they need that support, someone who's an expert to be able to help them in that area. Kurt, any closing words?
I mean, to me, the office manager, like you said, has to have the 10,000-foot view of the forest. And they got to know what the trees smell like. And so if you got to find both of those.
I know.
And it's a difficult job to fill. But, man, if you can fill it right, is it going to reap rewards? But don't expect them to be any more of a superhero than they already are. Let us help.
Yeah. That's a great point. Kurt, thank you for joining us. Doctor, this has been about managing your manager. I hope you got some useful information from our podcast today. I wish you good luck in your hiring, and I hope you find the manager that's the right fit for you.
This podcast was sponsored by Time Clocket, a powerful cloud-based time management and payroll system for your employees. Visit timeclocket.com.